Stay hungry, stay foolish.
So now on the Innovation Show, we welcome Simon Cocking, co-founder of Irish Tech News. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
So great to understand how did you get here? How did you, not only to Ireland, but how did you get to...
It's been a nice one of those ones that has evolved fairly organically. So I've been with it 2 years now this month, September. So since 2014, I've been writing, and then over those 2 years, our numbers have gone up every month, and it's had, you know, great growth, you know, and all gone in the right direction. So the guy who I now drive it forwards with, he initially had some other people he did it with for 2 years before that. And, you know, it's not logarithmic growth, but it's certainly nice, steady, maybe 45 degrees angle growth. And so he had people, and it's like a snowball really. And so it's not that the content is much, content is good, it was always good, but the trouble is you need an audience too. And so I guess one of the things that's been interesting is we've really looked at how much time do you spend creating content, and how much time do you spend placing it, knowing where to place it, putting it in the right place, because there's a lot of noise. And at the same time, you know, we look at TechCrunch, Mashable, you know, we know where we'd like to be, and, you know, we know that you grow and you build relationships. And so like we were discussing that, you know, we'll feature startups for free who are under 6 months old, partly to pay it forwards and partly strategically that ideally these are the guys that then you have good working relationships with as interesting things happen to them in the future. So, you know, 2 years down the road, it's one of those things that you can talk about growth hacking, but really a lot of people who've really succeeded, there's no magic overnight, you know, thing. It's actually the people who've been successful really, I think, have worked hard. Yeah, you've been creative and imaginative, and we're definitely smart and strategic, and we use the analytics to look at what articles do well. So, you know, we use the data and we tweak and we change, and we constantly do that. And then that's, I guess that's the nice thing about not being print, but being just digital, is you can respond quickly. You can look at something. If something sucks, you go, okay, well, we tried it, you know. Sometimes I would say to wind up my co-founder, but not quite. I would see how far away from tech I can go. And we did pieces on MMA, but we did about how Conor McGregor used social media. So, you know, I'd always try and have some relationship back to tech, but we've done fashion. Sony were interested in talking with us because they have dresses made out of recycled materials. But equally, being strategic, we look at the readership numbers from Elle and Cosmopolitan. And if you can do a piece that ticks the boxes occasionally of, you know, fashion and tech, well, then you might just bring in new readers. And then also, it's been quite nice. We've tried to do readable, interesting stories that maybe happen to be about tech, because we look at it in the way that I personally consume is that I'm looking at what am I interested in, and I'm constantly applying that filter to everything else I look at. If I look at BBC News or RTE, you know, whatever, I'm scanning, do I want to read the story or not? And therefore, even and within tech, you have to craft titles accordingly. So it means it's been an ongoing process. And again, like we were talking about with you, one of our guys, for a long time, we thought we should really do a podcast. So eventually one of our guys set him off running, and it was far more successful than we thought it would be. But we just weren't sure because there's so much noise out there. But again, his growth figures have followed the same, where it's slow but then steady, because it takes a while and you have to build up a back catalogue. It's a bit like they say with Amazon books. You should only really launch a book once you've got three books, because people look at, and if you like this, you might like that. Now, obviously, we don't all have three books ready and written, but it's that idea that maybe, you know, the wider your back catalogue is. And also, I guess we've seen this with this whole long tail, that cumulatively over the last 2 years, we now have about 4,500 articles. So what's happening is we put out, you know, 3 to 20 articles every day, but we're starting to see that some of the stats are for articles that were written 3, 6, 12 months ago, because people are following threads of expiration once today's piece has brought them in. But you can only do that once you have a back catalogue.
Yeah, it's funny, because when you when you think about it, and you've nailed it, is it's not, once you create that piece of content and put it out there, that's only part of the job, and it's actually becoming probably a third of the job now, because then you have to go and wrap it in analytics. How's it working? Is that title better than that title? Will it change the image? All this kind of stuff. And then there's a great Bruce Lee quote when he's talking about himself and how he reacted to fighting. He's like, you need to be like water, and if water's in the kettle, it reacts to the shape of the kettle or the bottle or the bath, whatever it may be. And content needs to do that, where it needs to react to whatever platform it's on, which means it needs to be treated differently. And you guys seem to do that really, really well.
I think I found that even though I'm a word person, so I like writing words, I'm not that pushed about podcasts, I still will no longer run a piece if we don't have good images. So even though, like everyone's saying, people are saying it's all going to video, but we're finding it's not. We find that people want to consume different types of media depending on where they are, the time of day, the time in the week. You know, you don't want video if you're in the office. You can discreetly read relevant articles. You don't want videos coming on. So I don't think it's just going to go to video. But that said, even if you're going to do word-based stuff, without a striking image, because we spoke about that competitiveness of what will I choose to read, well, the title and then the image are two hooks you still need to spend time on. And also, as a flip of that, because like I have an editorial role as well, some of our guys have great content and it's lousily titled, and we keep saying you need to phrase it in a way that it offers the reader something. So if you just say bunch of coders met up, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
Whereas if you can articulate the problem they're solving, you'll get the engagement. So it's interesting, you know, and yeah, even with words, you still need visuals and images, you know.
And it's all trial and error, isn't it? Like, yeah. I mean, that, it kind of very reflective of innovation programs or innovation in any company. You need to go, well, we're going to try this and yeah, we're going to, but what's more important is if it doesn't work, we're going to understand why, as much as why it did work.
Yeah.
And all the analytics are there. Like, I've talked to some publishers, well-known publishers, and they didn't know there was that much analytics in Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, whatever you want. It's all there, because that's part of their oil now, is offering the analytics as well as the platform. So how do you manage analytics and A-B testing and stuff like that?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's one, to know that they're there, even the basics, know how to look at your Google Analytics and know to drill in. We began to evolve that there are optimal times to put the content out, you know, that, you know, we don't really bother publishing much on Saturday and Sunday, because we're basically kind of the sort of content people choose to read in a more working capacity, you know. So we've A-B tested a bit, where we've put great articles out on a Saturday or Sunday and they just die. And we know that the same article has then done well when repositioned on a Monday to a Thursday, you know. So that's beginning to, you know, go to where your audience is and learn by that and then reposition your content accordingly. And, you know, the great thing is, even if you don't look at any other stats, if you look at views and days and times, you know, also we have a kind of sequentiality on it, that people come to work, and therefore, if they're on the Lewis or they're commuting, then they like bite-sized pieces. We used to have a time bar on the top that would tell you how long on the article was left to read. And some people would love that, because they would gauge whether it was worth reading the next article between this stop and the next stop on the Dart. And so Google does breakfast briefings about how you should do well. So Google always say longer is better. But actually, that's not always the case, because what we found, and so this is a good thing about having maybe a co-founder, is you have debates, you don't always agree, so you try stuff out. And so therefore, you go, well, okay, I'm going to hold my nose on this one, but I'll try it. So, you know, so Google says longer is better, you know. But the thing is, what we were finding is that back when we had the time indicator, one long article would get a certain number of people and then they drop off. But four short articles, let's say the long article equates to 10 minutes and four short articles equate to 5 minutes. So there's a total longer time of the four short ones. But if you package it as bite-sized pieces, we were getting better views on the four bite-sized pieces than what Google would say is the longer one. Because they were choosing, okay, I can read this between the next stop, I can read that one in the next stop, and I might just see what else is there. Whereas the 10 minutes, I don't have 10 minutes for you.
That's a really good point. And from a revenue perspective, I mean, and I know ad blocking is a major issue, but your four page impressions, you might have two ads per page versus one and the longer one, because I know, and there's a direct correlation between dwell time and click-through rates and that kind of metric, which I just think is a crazy metric anyway, because if you have a 10-minute dwell time and there's a brand there that's a well-branded, nice creative, that's worth as much as a click. Like, the click could be a mistake anyway.
Yeah.
And so in that world, can we move to that for a second?
Revenue.
Yeah, so revenue, like, I mean, because I was talking to Larry Bass, CEO of, and founder of Shinawill, about the quality part. Because, like, when you said about standing out and being the signal amidst the noise, you are. And you obviously focus on quality over quantity, not clickbait, the right article, the right headline, the right image to obviously attract somebody, but then delivering on the promise of that headline and the image. But the big threat, and we've seen, is even that the ad blocker doesn't care. It's indiscriminate of whether you're good or bad. And it's usually the bad guy. That's the reason they have an ad blocker in the first place.
Yeah. Well, so I guess you've begun from the position that the main driver of revenue will be on page ads. And I don't think it probably is, really, because the problem is, I mean, yes, a little bit, but, you know, the trouble is, you know, the amounts can be relatively small. And if you chase too hard for that, you get those pages that are just saturated in ads. So I guess we've tried to go down a model of a lot of advertisers or people that come to us sometimes aren't even asking us about the number of page views. They want to know what our digital footprint is in terms of our online following. And so it's maybe they're more interested in our potential audience that we can reach sometimes rather than just page metrics. And then an interesting thing has evolved for us. So the web summit's gone. So you now have maybe 30 poppies trying to pop up to fill what was a big monster that vacuumed everything up. So the great thing about that is they're all competing. So we've had a new interesting development where we've gone into partnerships with a succession of events to help showcase a particular event, but obviously one over another has become, you know, these partnerships often seems to be a way that you generate potential sources of revenue. So then rather than single ads, it's more about collaborating with different brands as long we feel that they're appropriate to partnership with. But the great thing is that, you know, it's a 4-week partnership, the event's finished, you move on, and we're interested when they have interesting speakers because it gives us access to, again, create good content, because they had the guy Rand Fishkin come over. So he does Moz Insights.
Brilliant.
So he's great. He's interesting. And he has 500,000 followers on Twitter. So there's a Venn diagram that we get to tap into by partnering with the conference at the same time as with the quality speakers.
Yeah.
And all of that has the potential to generate perhaps more revenue than the on-page ads.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, revenue is a big issue. And, you know, we were talking with BBC World and Mashable, and, you know, they aim to maybe bring in revenue from the ancillary things that they offer based upon the trustworthiness of the brand.
Yeah. And it is the only way in the world of the ad blocker. And the ads, you know, you'd argue their effectiveness anyway, because people aren't in that mindset when they're on a page. They're not actually, and thinking to where they kind of originated from, which was a magazine, it's like there's a really good ad beside a really good piece of content. Job done. Like, it's association. And maybe that needs to be a really good ad that reflects the content of that article. But clicking it is just, it always bugged me as a metric, because selling that was difficult. It wasn't difficult because it was what you sold on, a CTR, click-through rate. But I always thought it was a shame, because if your content was better and you had a high dwell time, then you're going to see the ad, definitely.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. I think it's a really good model, and especially getting into events yourself perhaps as well, because it's the ancillary stuff. It's about your brand. And going back to what you said about what you do, which is you're authentic on your content, you don't compromise on that content, and you become known for that. And that correlates back to what you said about your long tail of content as well, because you've proven yourself over such a long period of time to go, this is who we are. We were always that way. And then people, you build up trust, and it takes a long time, doesn't it?
Well, that's, I guess, yeah. I mean, 2 years in, you're an overnight success sort of.
Yeah.
So,
and it's having the runway to get you through the tough times is the tough part.
Yeah, that's the challenge. Absolutely. And I guess the good thing about that is that So we did a guy called Scott Eddy, and so he talks about you are your brand, and there's this whole thing about digital footprint. And so people like that become brand ambassadors. And so by having the platform to do this, and by just, like, I personally don't really like doing press releases because I see there's no value in it because it's copy and paste. They send it to every other news agency. So why put something up that is word for word? So I don't read, you know, I don't do them. I just can't see the value. So conversely, you know, with the you are your brand, you know, ideally you build up people respect what you do. And then from that, other interesting things have come. So, you know, like, obviously there's still the mortgage, there's still the children, the dog and the wife to feed. So you can't just trade on goodwill. But what I have definitely found is that by having done this, I get offered other things. And yeah. Overall, it's like I have about 5 people that I do other things for now. I have other clients that I didn't have any interviews. It was nothing like that. They all approached me and said, could you do work for us?
Yeah. And it's almost like, you know, it's putting your head above the parapet and doing something to start, because it becomes a spider's web then of, you know, opportunity.
Yeah.
So you, as James Corbett from Sim Virtua said, James said, it's about putting yourself at the table, because then you're in an opportunity to do something, and something might lead from it. And if it doesn't, you know, you've tried. You know? And it's funny because I find blogging, I've always wanted to do it, and I started doing it back in January, and it gives you a massive learning opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it, is that you immerse yourself in a topic. You need to know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll push myself and kind of go, it's something that I'm not 100% confident on. And when I speak sometimes at events, same thing, I'll kind of go, it's not my total area of expertise, but I'll learn everything I can about it, and I'll make it into somebody like me who doesn't fully understand it.
Yeah.
And I'll make it understandable for me, you know, because that's, we all want to, you know, the jargon days are over.
Yeah, I think so. And so I had a blog for about 6 months before I started writing for Irish Tech News, and that gave me the URLs to throw at them. Then by writing for Irish Tech News, then I freelanced the Sunday Business Post. So it's like a, you know, cascading progression up of organizations with bigger reach. And in the old day, you'd say, oh, I'd love to write for you. And they say, who are you? You know, go away. You didn't go to the right journalism college. Whereas now they say, well, who are you? And you say, well, here's 1500 articles I've done for X or Y. And therefore the blog gives you the platform. And yet at the same time, you learn from that. And then maybe you're learning in a more benign sandpit, you know, before you go up. Yeah. To the other bit, just from what you reminded me of, is that I think a good tech writer is somebody who doesn't pretend to understand it all, because I've just been at a data science thing, and already those guys in the room know way more than I do about the particular niche of data visualization. But if they can't explain it to me, I can't explain it to other people. And in any particular theme that we cover, VR, robotics, they're always going to know more than you. But your job is actually to communicate that to a wider audience. So therefore, I think if you start realizing you couldn't possibly know more than any one particular expert because they're the expert in it, then it switches the dynamic a bit, and then it's about communicating. So
yeah, and doing what you're a wordsmith, so you're using your expertise to tell this in common language and
to a wide audience.
Yeah, and I found that off for such a long time. There were like technical documents that half the blogs, you know, you kind of go, it just was not appealing.
Yeah.
And you know, it's what you said is interesting as well about, you know, going after people with big social followings, because it's no longer just about the journalism, it's about their tribe that they have as well.
Yeah.
And Seth Godin was on the show and he was talking about
this. Oh, great.
Yeah.
No, that's a big win then.
Yeah, awesome. And he was talking about tribes. So his fantastic book, Tribes. Yeah, it's a brilliant book. And yeah, I always say, the funny thing was, I was saying to him, Meatball Sunday, for example, like, that's a playbook for a big organization. All you do is read it and go, okay, we're doing all those things wrong. This is a playbook of how to do it.
Yeah.
Start with that. You don't, you know, and then go to the next level, because there's so much low-lying fruit there that it's easy to get a start. But I was thinking about what you guys are doing, and the people are more interested in tribes and verticals and really strong verticals now. So you have a tribe. It's built around a theme, and I know you said you might have fashion and tech, but it's tech is the common denominator all the time. So that becomes the tribe. While in the past it would have been scattergun, and I go with a big site with a massive reach and has like a tech section in sector 7G of the site that nobody can find, but it's there. Those I just see those big vanilla sites evaporating over time and it becoming about the tribes and advertising from an agency or from a brand, I'm going to go after the tribes that exactly, are relevant to me.
Exactly, yeah. And you have reminded me that we've been writing about blockchain and Bitcoin a lot, and it was very liberating to very quickly realize that we were not going to explain in every fresh article what that meant, because we realized, so, you know, so there's the national papers, but we've realized that they, every time they do an article, they have to explain the terms to this general audience of 40 to 70 who read on a Sunday only, kind of, you know. And I suddenly thought, no, this is it. This is actually great for us that we don't have that audience, but the audience we have are coming in at a level where they've chosen to read the article because they already know about the phrase, the terms in it. Now, that doesn't mean we're jargonistic or overly, you know, obtuse for the sake of it. But at the same time, if you've chosen to read a Bitcoin or a blockchain article with us, we're talking to the people who are making policy, who are thought leaders on it, and we're talking at their level because we figure you come in on that. And so that vertical is actually really liberating. And then this, an interesting thing has happened, that we are now getting listed on global influencer lists for blockchain, for IoT security and things like that. And yet, while on one hand that's incredibly niche, you know, they'll do a top 100, and on those 100, most of them will have 5,000 to a million followers on Twitter. So again, it's only a fraction, and Twitter's only a fraction, but within that fraction, you're having the conversations with the right people. And so then maybe that's actually better, worth it, and you'll be hitting the right people.
Yeah, so let's finish on that one with the you mentioned Twitter. So the platforms, you're seeing getting cut through, because like I have an Instagram account and I only started it recently and it's got serious reach. I mean, I just notice the reach is much more. And now I know it'll change when it gets to a certain scale, like the Facebook model, and then it'll be like,
oh, I hope not, you know.
Yeah, but it seems to be the pattern that, you know, a nice little gateway drug and then start charging for it when it reaches a critical mass or you're hooked, which is what we see with my main platforms. And by the way, like, I never criticize that. I think that's a great business model. It's build the scale, build the audience, and then start charging for access to that audience. And, but from a cut-through perspective, what are you seeing works well from a distribution perspective?
Right, so and that's interesting, because what we've begun to find is that the 2 years and beyond, we know where to put particular articles. So, you know, that's the thing. So you don't blindly just broadcast, you know, you don't even just blindly tweet out. And sometimes it's not even Twitter. So for example, in Dublin, there's a vibrant FPV drone racing. So FPV is first person view drone racing. The national championships were on last weekend. And where are they most active? They have a Facebook page, which is just hopping. You know, you can just see it by the frequency of comments, the number of members, the number of engagement with every post. So whenever we do anything about drones, there are certain mental things in our head that we know are the right places. And the good thing is they know us. We've been to their training. We've been to their thing at the RDS. So we're not just opportunistically, we've built the relationship that therefore they're happy to receive content from us because we went there and we went to their events. So therefore, for that particular thing, if you were going to say drones, then I'd be like, okay, then it needs to go there. And there are US equivalents if it's a more global story. On the other hand, say with Twitter and with the, like, say if we did a piece with Seth Godin, then we'd go after where they're active. And so that's people who are active on Twitter.
That's a good point. You know, yeah. So you're adapting to where the recipient of the content. Yeah. That's a really good point.
And so it's a little bit more time consuming, but this is the challenge with a lot of good content out there is you have to have good content. Maybe only 20% of you have good content. But once you're in that 20%, you still have to differentiate yourself from the other 19%. And the win for us is we look at a lot of PR companies and they're not active on Twitter. They're not. They mail and blast out and they just email and, you know, they're not targeting their audience.
Yeah.
So we're having to be a bit creative, but that's, I guess, the nature of new media, you know?
Yeah. And are you using any tools that you can tell us
about?
Yeah,
so there's a bit of that. And again, we have four main people in it. So, you know, one of them loves Instagram and Snapchat. So he keeps giving out to me that I'm not on it, you know. Conversely, other people have said, nail one medium and go for that. So I'm happy for him to nail that one because...
Brilliant, yeah.
You know.
Because of time. I mean...
Well, this is it. Yeah. I have used... So we had a debate about how much time did various people spend creating and how much promoting. And we were getting eventually to possibly 20-80. you know, and that wasn't 20 promoting, that was maybe 20 creating and 80
wow.
putting in the right place.
That's totally reverse, isn't it? Most places, yeah. Well, I don't mean it in a bad way. I mean, that's what you have to do now.
Well, again, you look at the analytics and the data. And so previously it would have been LinkedIn, but then LinkedIn's become a bit of a spam feed. And the problem is that the level of self-promotion, it becomes like a Facebook feed. And therefore it drives down the value because therefore the noise is too much. And so either you compete with that noise or, I mean, LinkedIn, if you tag people, it's probably okay. But LinkedIn groups that have much less value than they used to because some of the groups have 1 million members. And 1 million members of everybody competing, it's just gone, you know? Whereas Twitter, with the relevant hashtag and the relevant influencer for certain stories, it gets value, it gets retweeted. And the great thing is that if you do somebody like a Seth Godin and they retweet it, implicitly they're endorsing it. So therefore, it's that third-party validation.
Yeah.
So I guess whatever the platform, you're looking for third-party validation that someone else says, this is a great article I enjoyed by these guys.
Yeah.
Because so, we can all say our articles are great.
Because that's one of the things that I find incredible, that people are still looking at page impressions. Like you talked about your analysis of the analytics where you're kind of going in and going, okay, look, there's certain content on these certain days, etc. That's much better than piping out and just sending a PDF every week and going, here's the top pages, top sections. Because that's just reported analytics. It's not telling anything about the behavior or the stickiness of the content, where it performed best and why it performed best.
Gender breakdown.
All that stuff, like which is gold to actually go, okay, well, let me decipher what did I do here that it would work better with. And they're all there. There's no excuse.
Yeah.
So what's coming next? What can we expect to see from Irish Tech News?
I've been invited to Tel Aviv to go and cover startups.
Brilliant.
In May, I was invited to Singapore to mediate a panel with Mashable and BBC World about the future of media.
Brilliant, man.
So we're starting to be asked to be media partners with both Irish and overseas events, which is obviously great for profile. And this is the thing a bit like being the, are we just a hamster in a wheel spinning the wheel round, or are we driving it to the point where you get that next stage? And again, when I was saying growth hacking doesn't really happen overnight, I think what's happened is we go up and then we plateau and then we work out what we need to do. So that's all going, and then being invited to these overseas ones is fantastic for validation.
Yeah.
Then I guess the good, what's happening, we did a wishes of what we'd like to happen, and what's happening is people are now approaching us who would now like to contribute to the site because they now perceive there's value in them writing for us.
Yeah, so you've become a distribution platform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we have 20 or 30 people that create regularly for us, whereas before it was 4.
Wow. You know? And also, I mean, that means that from an advertiser perspective, there's an opportunity from a content marketing, you know, because if you're beyond a world of ad blocking, you know, content marketing becomes, because you become the distribution platform.
Yeah, it's the inbound marketing, isn't it?
Like yeah.
People can turn off ads, so you need to be interesting enough that people want to come to you.
Yeah, the content is the marketing, yeah. So, well, Simon Cocking, co-founder of Irish Tech News, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.